City Talk 105.9.
Late Night City with Pete Price. Scousers Abroad.
I'm now going to a Scouser Abroad over in Singapore. Now, this young man has done incredibly well for himself, originally from the Wirral, and we're going to say hello to Paul. Hiya, Paul.
And hello, Pete. And how's life in Blighty today?
It's amazing. Now, Paul, I've got to sort something out. We've known each other for a long, long time, but I do not remember your second name because it's so hard to say.
Well, it's not that hard for the educated ones, Peter.
Go on, it's then, tell me.
It's Baragwanath.
Well, I don't remember Paul Baragwanath in West Kirby. I would remember that name.
Maybe you should have got out a little bit more often when you were younger.
God. So what is it? Is it English?
It's an old Cornish name.
Right.
But funny enough, out in this part of the world, they think that it's slightly Indian. And when people hear the name, they think I'm wearing a turban.
Right. But you're not.
Yes. But I'm not, no.
So
I've got blue eyes and well, I used to have blonde hair, but it's slightly grey now.
And you also wear some beautiful clothes. I met this gentleman again this year in Singapore, and I wanted the suit he had on.
That was not a suit. That was my Indian tuxedo.
All right, your Indian tuxedo. Paul, let's go back to the beginning. Yeah. You're a Scouser Abroad now. Where are you originally from?
I was actually born in Kaduna because my father was in the colonial service. But on the 9th of September 1956 at 5 p.m. on a Sunday, I came into this world. Mm-hmm. And that was about the same time as Nigeria was going independent. So my father took sort of early retirement. And both my parents are from the Wirral. And that's when they moved back to West Kirby.
So you were living in West Kirby. For how long were you there?
Since we came back from Nigeria. So I was probably, that would have been 56, about 58 or 59, I was living in West Kirby.
And we had some lovely mutual friends, the Bulldogs.
Well, we did. They lived at number 4 Riversdale Road, and we lived at number 6. So there was just a wall dividing us.
And that was the wonderful road that I used to walk down every Sunday to go to Hilbury Island on Hilbury Sunday.
But, you know, funny enough, because my younger brother still lives in Mells, and he was just saying he took the kids over to Hilbury just the other day. Mm. Yeah, and don't forget the Marine Lake as well.
Absolutely. Well, you've travelled the world, but you've got to say the Wirral is a beautiful place, isn't it?
You know, absolutely. There, I couldn't have thought of a nicer place to be brought up.
So, you went to school. What was your first job? What did you do?
Well, funny enough, when I was at school, my mum said that I was always a worker. So I think I was a caddy at the Royal Liverpool. That's where I think I picked up my love of golf. Mm-hmm. And I think I lasted not very long as a paperboy for about 2 weeks. And that was only because my girlfriend at the time had a round and I just used to walk around with her. And yeah, no, I think I was a milkman at Peter's, not Peter's, what was his name? Smith's Dairy and Mel's Drive. Yeah, no, I've done a little bit of things. But then I went off to join the Navy.
So you went to join the Navy. So that's where your company came in, because you're into everything to do with that, aren't you? You're the managing director of an incredibly successful company called Underwater Shipcare.
Well, it didn't actually start that way. My parents actually sent me over to Riversdale, to the nautical school there, just for an aptitude, because I had a couple of uncles who were captains, and you know, I didn't really have a clue what I wanted to do, and they just thought it might be a good idea. That I think they thought that send me off to sea and get me out of the house. But it was only there that I had an inkling about one of the instructors was talking about his son was a deep sea diver, and it was like a light bulb went off, and it all went from there.
Paul, how long were you in the Navy for?
Just over 6 years.
Did that give you the grounding for what you do now?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. the Royal Navy clearance divers are without doubt the best trained divers in the world. And it was absolutely loved, 99% of my time.
I'm talking to Paul in Singapore, and he was originally from the Wirral, which is really fascinating. Now, I've got to ask you a few questions before we talk about when you went away. Let's stay with diving for a while, because I've not spoke to anybody about diving before. How dangerous is it with all this pressure and or has it changed over the years?
Oh, God. Leaps and bounds, Peter. In the late 60s and early 70s, especially when the North Sea started kicking off. If you could do two lengths of a swimming pool, the oil companies were so desperate to get people underwater that they employed every Tom, Dick and Harry. But because the amount of deaths that occurred, then, they had to start putting a lot of legislation in. And that's why they allowed quite a lot of the Navy divers to leave, because they needed to get some professionalism into the North Sea.
So you say it's come on leaps and bounds. It was a very dangerous profession. How has it changed without getting too technical?
Well, it's like anything. There are dangers, but there are dangers in a lot of professions. But it all depends on how you manage those dangers. And as I say, with the technology, the whole diving industry has come in leaps and bounds now. So the danger element has been taken out quite considerably. But of course, it's still not like delivering milk on a Sunday morning. There are dangers involved, but they are managed much better these days.
And I presume there is much work for divers because of the rigs, etc., and the shipping now.
Oh well, it was always in it really started off for the oil exploration, but actual ship maintenance, repairing ships, only really started off. Well, a little bit, of course, with the navies and things like that, but for the merchant navy, only really in the sort of early 70s, with the technology of the equipment. And it was always better to keep a ship, once a ship goes into a dry dock, it's losing money. So at least with having divers, they can relatively do a lot of repairs and keep the ship moving.
So you're in the Navy. What happened when you left the Navy?
I left the Navy, and like most divers leaving the Navy, they head straight up to Aberdeen, and you're starting working offshore. But I had a little bit of luck. I used to do a part time work for a local diving company, Mark Berry, called Manor Diving. Now this was back in 1977, 78. That's how I got to hear of this company that was dealing with underwater ship repair business, and that's how I sort of went down and applied for a job, and I started with a company in Southampton. Wow. And that's how that whole ball started to roll.
So you went to Southampton, and then what, the company had a place in Singapore?
No, what happened is that the company was based in Southampton, and used to fly around the world about three or four times a year, doing surveys on different ships in different locations, and I'd just come back from about 3 weeks in the Middle East in Dubai, and my boss said to me, "Would you like to go out to Singapore and start up a joint venture?" And I originally only meant to come out for about a year. But as as soon as you step off that plane in Singapore, you just fall in love with the place.
Yeah. How long have you been there now?
I have been here 34 years.
Wow. Tell me, have you seen a big change? Because I've only been going for about 7 years, and I've seen a change slightly every time I go, especially with the buildings. But have you seen a big change?
I've seen a huge change. The thing about Singapore, they keep reinventing themselves. It's one of these countries where when they decide to do something, it gets done, and it gets done straight away. You know, from the hotels to the roadways to the infrastructure. It's you know, they sometimes describe people as workaholics. I would describe Singapore as a workaholic island. They're always endeavouring to improve the infrastructure and just the whole quality of life.
And what is life like over there?
Well, you know, with my limited education, Peter, I think the only word that comes to mind is brilliant.
Right. Why is it so good? No. I know you're successful, but why, if you were ordinary and not in the bracket you're in, what would life be like there?
It doesn't matter what bracket you're in. You know, if you like warm weather, you like good food, you like a safe environment, an honest environment, there's only one place to be, and that's Singapore. And even though I do a considerable amount of traveling these days, mainly more on holiday rather than pleasure, it's always nice to get back on that Singapore Airlines plane and know you're going home.
So you see that completely as your home?
Oh, I'm a Singapore. I don't know how to say this, but I actually renounced my British passport. I didn't want to because I wanted dual nationality. Yeah. But I'm actually a fully fledged Singaporean these days.
Wow. Now, Paul, your company has done incredibly well, Underwater Ship Care, and you've won all sorts of awards. Why is it done so well? Because there's so much competition over there, or is there?
Well, I wouldn't say there was so much competition, but there is competition. And I remember someone saying to me, this is many years ago, competition is, keeps everybody honest, which I think it does. But we drive, I'm sort of the captain behind the ship. And we just drive that, you know, for perfection. You know, there's no job that we won't undertake.
Now, I've got to find out if this is a myth or not. And I love this. I've been dying to ask. And if anybody knows, it will be you. Right. When you fly into Singapore, there are hundreds, if not thousands, and you'll tell me how many, ships waiting either to come in or just sitting there. Now, there are all these ships. I heard a whisper that a lot of them are bankrupt and just sit there. Now, break the myth on this.
I've just broken the myth on that. That is incorrect. Singapore Harbour is the busiest harbour in the world.
Right.
There, you know, there's container ships coming in. I think there's a container ship arriving or leaving in Singapore every 3 or 4 minutes. There's super tankers. There's LNG type ships. There are one or two sort of semi-laid up ships, I would say 90% of all the ships in Singapore at any one time are operational.
Why do you think, as a man who is successful, a man who's travelled the world, why do you think Singapore is so successful?
Well, Lee Kuan Yew, who actually founded Singapore, and unfortunately passed away about six weeks ago. He just had a very high morals about how to do business. You know, he was completely against any type of corruption, which, you know, can't be said for one or two of the neighboring countries. There was nothing that couldn't be done. He was a great believer in where there's a will, there's a way. And he was just like some people say he was a dictator, some people say he wasn't. But whatever he was, he brought Singapore from nothing to the metropolis it is today.
So when you first went there all those years ago, was it anything like it is now?
It still had a lot of those characteristics, but of course the high rises have come, the highways have come, and just the whole infrastructure has changed. you know, in the early days to go from downtown Singapore, say, to Woodlands would be like maybe an hour and a half, or maybe sometimes 2 hours. Now you can do it in 15 minutes.
Wow.
And that's by driving. But and, of course, now they've introduced the MRT, the Mass Rapid Transport, or, you know, you call it the Underground in London. So getting around Singapore is 100% easier these days than it used to be.
Now, it's not cheap, is it, to live there?
Oh, it's. I was recently in London. You know, England's not cheap these days.
Yeah,
but
true.
You know, you can go for your fine dining, or you can go to one of the little hawker stalls and have equally good food. So, expensive. There's certain things that are very expensive. Houses are very expensive. Cars are very expensive. For restaurants you have the very high end, and you have the shorts and flip flops. So,
alcohol's not cheap, is it?
I must admit I haven't really get the grasp on. I'm not really sure how much a pint of bitter is in the UK these days, but I do know that when overseas guests come, they go, "Oh, blimey, I can't believe the price of a pint here."
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe it is slightly high, but
Now I went and had a look at some of the properties around, and it was amazing across the bridge in the Santos. What's it called? Santosa. And I saw a flat.
Yeah.
I saw a flat for $2 million Sing dollars, and then I saw a house next door for $36 million. It is bizarre, the price of property there, isn't it?
For a house here, you can buy a little patch of good of England. Yeah, it's such a small island that real estate, of course, has to be a premium.
Hmm. Now, go on.
Yeah. So you know you can't really a lot of people come from England and say they can't believe the prices, but I say land in say in Scotland or in Wales, you know, there's so much of it, but in Singapore, you know, every square inch is being utilized. So when everything's at a premium, you have to pay a premium price.
Yeah. Explain about the cars, because apparently you can't have a car 10 years old and the cost is astronomical, isn't it?
They have what they call a COE, and that's a certificate of entitlement. And at the moment, you go on the car CC here. So I think the COE now for a 2 litre car is about $60,000 or $70,000, and that's just a piece of paper just to say that you can go to one of the dealerships to buy a car.
Wow.
And you're allowed to keep, and then you go and buy the car, which is, so it, for instance, say you bought a Porsche. Yep. In Singapore, yeah, you can buy about three and a half Porsches in the UK. Mm. With the various taxes here, yeah.
Now tell me, go on.
But then after 10 years, you can either actually pay again to keep the car, or you scrap it, and then the government will give you some sort of payback. And then that's why relatively you don't see any wrecks in Singapore. All the cars are 10 years or less.
Paul, I think one of the most amazing things, and like you, I've travelled the world, I have never felt so comfortable anywhere as I do in Singapore. People smile at you, people get on with their business, people are there. It is, you can eat off the floor on the pavement. It is amazing that way, isn't it?
It's one of these things, you know, they call Singapore a fine city, and that's F-I-N-E, which means that if you do anything wrong, you'll get fined. So if you get, you know, throw a bit of paper on the road or litter the place, you know, a Singaporean, you don't have to be the police or anyone like, will actually can report you and you get a fine. And that is why, if you know that everyone is watching each other, you try and keep the place clean. And that's why it's so spotless, because there's heavy fines for littering. Mm. And so there should be.
Paul, what are the downsides living in Singapore, if any?
One of the downsides? Yeah, we don't get any snow. I'm I'd rather take my clothes off than put them. So I do like the warm climate.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, with the humidity here, which is, you know, in the 90s, which is, you know, is quite a lot. It sometimes gets you a little bit depressed, but I soon slap myself and say, well, I could either be back in England where it's peeing down with rain. Yeah. At least the rain here is warm.
Yeah. Paul, apart from family and friends, what do you miss, if anything, about England?
Yeah. When my parents were alive, I used to go back every summer. My family and friends know, or my British ones know, that if you're going to get married or you're going to pass away, you have to do it in the summer months, because I don't go to England, after September and before April. I used to go back every year and spend what I call a quality month with my parents. And it was just nice to chill out, detox. But, you know, one of my great pleasures, I used to love going across the water to Liverpool and just sponging in that Scouse sense of humour. Yeah. If anything I miss the most, it would be the undaunted, brilliant humour that Scousers have.
It's interesting you say that, but also, Paul, it's changed from when you first went. We have got Skype. We've got the most amazing communication now to what it was 30-odd years ago.
I used to love, when I was a young diver in Liverpool, and we used to go and do a bit of work in Gladstone Dock and all of those type of places. Yeah. And then you just go to the pub and just listen to them.
Yeah.
The stories that they come out with, it's,
Paul, interesting. You mentioned about diving then. It's a growing industry, isn't it? Because more and more shipping's out there. What advice would you give to anybody that would want to be a diver? How do they go about it?
Well, I would always say join the Royal Navy. Try and if you can go do the, because it's one of the hardest courses in the Navy to become a clearance diver. The other hardest course is being a cook in the Navy, because not many pass that course. But go join the Navy, or if you don't want to go down the military route, there's so many different commercial diving schools now. You know, you've got Fort William, which probably has the best name, and then you can get into the commercial diving that way.
Right. Is it a hard career? And also, what's the lifespan of a diver?
It all depends on how fit you keep yourself. But, you know, because being a diver, you know, the rates of pay are extremely, extremely good. And you normally get some divers that will do it for 10, maybe 12, 15 years, make their money, get out, open up a pub or do something else. And then you've got other divers working offshore in their 60s who are incredibly fit. So it's a personal thing. But the draw of the money and the 2 weeks on or the 4 weeks on, so, you know, you do a month offshore and then you get a month at home. Some people like that lifestyle.
It's interesting you say that, because what jumped into my mind was Derek Lilly. Derek Lilly was a diver who then opened Mr. Chow's in Parkgate years ago and then bought Westwood Grange, and now is one of our biggest, well, I think he's just sold his company for millions and millions. So, yes, I take on board what you mean.
Well, I remember Westwood Grange as a young teeny bopper, and I don't think I ever met him personally, but I was there off one of my home leaves and said, "Oh, it's a commercial diver that bought this place
over."
Yeah,
that's right.
So the money is very good, and God, we used to have some fun.
Why is your company so successful underwater, Shipcare?
Because we sort of, maintain this, we buy state-of-the-art equipment, we're heavy into training, no job is too big or too small for us. And, I must admit, not wanting to be too, I've already made my money, but I get more satisfaction when one of the ship owners say, your divers did a brilliant job, rather than making an extra $1,000 here or there.
Tell me, can people get into Singapore to live or not these days? How does it work?
It's a little bit more difficult these days to get a job in Singapore because the Singapore government wants to, wherever they can, employ the Singaporeans, which rightly so. But of course, we still have to. Singapore was actually grew up on foreign talent, foreign labour. So the ease to get a work permit here or a work pass here is a lot more difficult these days than when it was when I came 30-odd years ago.
Paul, you're a fascinating man. Is there anybody over here that's left your friends? Can we have some name checks? Tell us, say hello to a few people.
Well, there's my younger brother Peter that lives in Mel. He's also had quite a good career. You might want to talk to him because he started off as a diver and now flies helicopters for Bristow.
Oh.
But they've got Ian is in Norwich and I'm sure Wendy, as we say, our mutual friend from Riversdale Road, would love to listen to this and. Ron Suter, Kieran, there's so many people, so many good friends that I have living in the UK. That's why my wife says it's about time that we went back and paid a little visit.
And she is divine, by the way. She is a lady and a half.
I must admit there. We actually met each other. She hates me saying this on Valentine's Day, 1988, but we only got married about 4 or 5 years ago, and I always say if I was to come and do this all again, the first thing I'd do is get married earlier. And she says, "Oh, really?" And I said, "Yeah, because if I'd got married a little bit earlier, I could have claimed it all against tax."
Paul, I am so glad you spent some time with me. You're a nice, nice man. You're a very hospitable man. And you're a very interesting man. But I'm going to have to ask you to pronounce your second name again. I really have got a problem with it. I'm being honest.
Well, I'll say it again slowly for the hard
Thank
of hearing.
Yes.
It's Baragwanath. Baragwanath.
Paul Baragwanath, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Peter. And I look forward to seeing you at Buckingham Palace when we get knighted.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show.
This is Late Night City with Pete Price on City Talk 105.9.